Renowned illustrator Gregory Manchis has created a lavishly painted novel about the son of a famed polar explorer searching for his stranded father in a lost city buried under snow in an alternate future. In Above the Timberline, when it started to snow, it didn't stop for 1,500 years. The pole shift that ancient climatologists talked about finally came. The topography was ripped apart and the weather of the world was changed forever. Now the earth is covered in snow and to unknown depths in some places. Original artworks from the book are currently on view at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts through February 24th. Manchis has worked as a freelance illustrator for nearly 40 years. On advertising campaigns, magazines, and book covers. It's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
A great pleasure to have you on the program. So talk a little bit about this project and how it came about for you, of what got you thinking in this direction.
Well, I've been an illustrator for decades, and I was asked at one point to do a type of a video, a how-to video on how I paint. And I didn't know what I was going to do, and it was about 24 hours before the film crew was going to show up in my studio. And I was talking to a friend of mine on the phone, and she said, "You like to paint snow. Why don't you show a guy riding a polar bear?" And I thought that was one of the silliest things I'd ever heard, but I thought, well, not riding a polar bear, maybe polar bear pack animals. So I sat down and I sketched a couple thumbnails, little tiny sketches. And within 24 hours, I had the idea, and the film crew came to the studio and I painted this thing. And it got remarkable attention right after that. People just wanted to know about who that guy was and why was he on that mountain with polar bears. And after a while, a friend of mine said, "You should put that in front of a publisher." And I thought, yeah, that's going to happen. But I knew some folks in the business, and I started sharing it and showing it around, and people got excited about it. And anyway, long story short, it finally got picked up by Simon & Schuster Saga Press. My editor was Jill Monty there.
So When you then have the idea and you're all in, then what goes into creating that world?
Well, that was kind of the scary part for me, but I based it on my adventures as an illustrator. When I started out, I was turned down by all the art schools I applied to. Nobody wanted me to be at their school. Anyway, eventually one art school accepted me on probation. And I thought, well, wow, this art thing is really going to be pretty difficult. So I just applied myself like crazy. I was certain I didn't have talent. And I thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm just going to have to fake my way into having people think that I have talent. So I looked at it the same way when it came to writing this. I'd written all my life, but never really had anything published. I'd written children's books and articles and things like that. And I thought, I'm going to take this a step at a time. And what's the first step? The first step is visual. And so I started sketching. And when I did the little tiny thumbnails, I lined them up in sequence and I had a story going. And so from there, I would stop and write. I would write about the character, things about the world. Then I would go back to drawing. Then I would write some more, and I would go back and forth like that for, you know, months and years eventually.
When did the book finally come out?
It was October of 2017.
Okay.
It took about 8 years to get to that point. It took about 3 years of intense study, research, writing, drawing, going back and forth. I wrote about a 300-page novel and then went back into it and ripped out everything that was not going to that was basically visual. Because why write about it when I can paint it? And so I stripped the book down to about 10 to 14,000 words. And I knew I didn't want a graphic novel, and I didn't want to write just a straight novel. And I wanted those paintings to be, to grip the reader and pull them through the pages.
When you think about this art, I mean, is it for you, is the art first?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, most of writing is visual anyway. And for me, being an illustrator, it's going to naturally come as a visual first. But they, in the beginning stages, they get pretty muddy. They move in and out of character designs and thoughts and thumbnail sketches. And it's pretty amorphous for a while until you, at some point, you have to just sit down and say, all right, day one, bang, and start drawing from there and writing to flesh out what's not shown. So basically it's, you know, painting what you don't write about and write about what you can't paint was kind of an overall guide for what I was doing. Things you can't really show in the painting, like what they're listening to or how they feel inside, things like that. You can get that across, that emotional touch, a little bit in the visual, but it's on a different level than when we write. And I've wanted those experiences to go back and forth as you look through the novel.
So at what point in this process, say a year and a half ago, that they said, oh, we would love to show these paintings in a museum, namely the Norman Rockwell Museum?
Yeah, well, I had had a show of the work at the Society of Illustrators in New York. I'd been showing there for a number of years, getting into shows that were very difficult to get into, and I managed to get some work in there. And Stephanie Plunkett from the Norman Rockwell Museum would come down and look at the shows, and I got to talk to her every now and then. And she asked me one time years ago if I'd like to do a workshop at the Norman Rockwell Museum, and I said, yeah, I'd love to. So I did, and they had me back a couple of times. I loved it there because I've always loved Rockwell, and the storytelling is superior in his work. And so once the book was out and published, I gave Stephanie a call, and I said, I got 124 paintings here. I mean, it's a show kind of waiting to happen. Would you guys be interested? She said the timing was perfect because they were doing an adventure show featuring Frank Schoonover's work from his decades of being a famous illustrator back in the early 1900s. And it was just a great match. So it went from there.
You've had the experience before, but what is it like to see the work not on the page, not replicated, but on the wall of a museum, especially, and I will be specific in this case, and especially next to Rockwell's?
It's indescribable, but thrilling at the same time. I've been trying to work out just what that feeling is, but the easiest way I can describe it is to just say it's a buzz that's been coming for a long time. I have looked at the Rockwell Museum and Norman Rockwell's work since I was a kid, and loved what he was painting and talking about, and the visual stories he was telling. So when I walk into the museum now and I see my work on the wall, in one sense, it feels like it's all come together. Like that was my point. Like I was searching for that all my career to go, okay, now they're on the wall. Now I can start my career. In another sense, it's just a giddy happiness, because to be connected with a museum of that graciousness and beauty and wonder really is an honor you can't really talk about. You'd have to see my face.
I'll just assume happiness.
That's right.
You know, do you also think about, I mean, I don't know whether this probably is something that you think about, but whether it's, you know, it's, I'm going to sit down and really connect the dots on it, but how much do you think about the role of an illustrator and not comparing yourself to Rockwell, but how that term illustrator applied to him applies to you, and it may mean a different thing now than it did then?
It does mean a different thing now. You know, when I came into the business, the word illustrator was a dirty word. It was, you know, synonymous with commercial artist. So, you know, those guys, they're slime because they're painting for money. And I couldn't figure out why that was, because all the illustrators that I knew and had admired over my young life and then into the career were phenomenally good at painting and phenomenally good at drawing. And they could pull you into that picture so swiftly, within seconds. You had a story going on. It made you curious, and you wanted to find out more. And I thought that was miraculous. But when I went to art school, illustration was looked at as the bad stepchild, just because of the financial aspects, I think. And so I struggled for a lot of years. But getting out of art school and realizing I wanted to make a living from my artwork, the galleries were not the place to do that, especially for a young guy coming out into the field. So I moved toward illustration. I really didn't understand what it was back then, but I let my career define it. And over the years, illustration has given me the skills to paint whatever is in my mind. And I love that. I'm not crazy about art that talks about art. I would rather talk about the human condition, stories, characters, people. And illustration gives you that. So it's changing now, though, that illustration is coming to the forefront. Once again, we can see it from film. The skill level out there of the artists is phenomenal. And I point to the computer for that, because a lot of the artists are able to, these young artists are able to go to the computer and start using it to learn what visual images are all about. And the skills are incredible.
With that technology, has your, this will be the final question, but given that technology, has your process changed at all over the years?
Yeah, it has. I was pretty lucky that when I came out of art school, I went to a studio in Iowa called Helm Design Associates. And the boss there was Gary Kelly, who later on became one of the most awarded illustrators, actually, of all time. He's a brilliant guy, still a friend of mine, and he always encouraged me to keep pushing. Even when I would work on a job at the studio, he would say, "Yeah, take it another step. I think you got more in you on that one." And he would do that constantly. And I carried that with me into my career, so I was always trying to move forward with my skills and my thinking. And so it's changed a lot. I got into a spot where I was painting a lot of the same thing for a while. But when I started to teach, I had to live up to what I was telling those students. Because of my bad art school experience, I didn't want to give them the same thing. So I had to live up to those skills. And it immediately changed my skill level and brought me into higher levels of understanding that I had no idea I was going to reach. And so now with the computer, I've learned a lot about seeing images that reflect back from the computer into my oil painting work. And I take the oil painting work into some of the digital work. So it goes back and forth.
Well, the exhibit is beautiful. The exhibit and book are titled Above the Timberline. Original artworks from the book are currently on view at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts through the 24th of February, nrm.org. Gregory Manchus, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it.
Very nice conversation. I appreciate you being on the program. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.